Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay and have had a wonderful weekend. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Monday, January 19th. There's plenty of news to get through today, including calls from local parents to raise the social media age. We'll take a look at Blue Monday and there's a wrap-up of some of the amazing football results from over the weekend. But first, before we get into all of that, let's take a look at our top story for today. Police investigations are ongoing following a murder on the Isle of Sheppey over the weekend. Reporter Joe Crossley has been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. He's been out on Sheppey this morning and was able to answer a few questions for me. First of all, Joe, can you just give us a bit of background on this?
A man in his 50s is believed to have been murdered in Noreen Avenue in Minster around 6:30 p.m. on Saturday. Detectives say he died from stab wounds, and in an update this morning, the force said that it has charged 23-year-old William Hepworth from Alma Road, Sheerness, with murder. I've been down in Noreen Avenue this morning to talk to residents and witnesses to see what they saw and what they heard. One 66-year-old woman told me how she was sitting on her bed when the incident broke out and said that her room was basically lit up from all the blue lights from the masses of police cars which were sent to the scene. Ambulances and fire engine and a fire engine was also sent. She said she had never seen anything like this in her row before, which she described as quiet. She also said that the police were in the row for quite some time, with sniffer dogs being seen going round the street until around about 4 o'clock on a.m. I should say 4 a.m. on Sunday morning. A tent was also seen in the road. The street was closed off to the public by police until around 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. the next day, so that's Sunday still. Another resident told me how he felt it was like being in a movie because of all the emergency services that had turned up in the road.
Thanks so much, Joe. We'll be updating this story as more details come to light. For the very latest, click on the story on the homepage at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Also making news today, a man in his 50s has died in hospital after being seriously injured in a collision on the M2. He was driving a gold-coloured Jaguar that crashed on the coastbound stretch near the Medway services last Thursday night. No other vehicles were involved. Investigators are keen to speak to witnesses or anyone with dashcam footage. Police searching for a man who went missing near Canterbury have found a body. 27-year-old Cameron Williams disappeared from Barham on January 2nd. A discovery was made in Woodland yesterday afternoon. His family has been told and the death is not being treated as suspicious. A man who stabbed a work colleague in Sittingbourne has been warned he'll face decades in prison. Alex Whitby was just 19 when he attacked Stephen Smith. He also pulled him down the stairs, causing a life-threatening brain injury. He claimed to have acted in self-defence, but a judge dismissed that. The 22-year-old from Boyer Street in Loughborough will be sentenced in April. A Gillingham woman's gone on trial, charged with attempting to murder her neighbour in a row over noise. Helen Tilcock is accused of stabbing Sarah Hodges repeatedly in the communal garden of a property on Barnsall Road in July last year. The 42-year-old claims she acted in self-defence. The trial continues. A coroner has found a motorcyclist who died in a crash on Sheppey likely had a medical episode before the collision. 25-year-old Patrick Lipinski from Sittingbourne veered off Laysdown Road during a ride with his dad last August. An inquest heard he previously suffered heart palpitations and had been referred by doctors for further investigations before his death. A retired police officer who sent inappropriate messages to someone he thought was a 14-year-old girl has avoided being sent to prison. Maidstone Crown Court heard Peter Gilmore was caught by online child safety campaigners before being arrested while on holiday in Devon. The 57-year-old, who has links to Ashford and Dover, also admitted making indecent images. He's been given a suspended sentence and ordered to do 120 hours of unpaid work. A Margate man who was involved in a kidnapping in 2019 has been back in court for other offences. Elliot Cox was part of a group who bundled a man into the boot of a car in Thanet and then called his family, demanding £17,000 for his safe return. The 28-year-old from Palmer Crescent spent 4 years in prison and was arrested again when police found him passed out near an abandoned car in Westgate. He's been given a driving ban and ordered to do 80 hours of unpaid work. A Dover man who threatened to beat up a petrol station worker when his fuel payment failed has been ordered to undergo mental health treatment. Lee Smith punched the card machine at the Gulf Garage on New Street in Sandwich in January last year. The 34-year-old from Longfield Road was found to be in breach of a community order imposed for an earlier attack on a traffic warden. He currently owes the court more than £5,000 in fines, costs and compensation.
Kent Online News.
South East Water say they hope to restore full supplies across Kent today after 2 weeks of disruption. Nearly 5,000 customers experienced fresh outages over the weekend. The main problem was an electrical fault at a treatment works impacting residents and villages around Maidstone. Latest NHS figures show 2025 was Kent's worst year on record for so-called trolley waits. The terms used to describe a delay of 12 hours or more from the decision to admit a patient to them being given a bed. Over 28,000 were recorded last year compared to just 134 in the whole of 2019. Josh Alexander went to QEQM in Margate after suffering stomach pains which led to a burst appendix.
I passed out on the floor in A&E, a dirty floor. Obviously, people have been walking in and out from outside. And I was passed out on it, and I was laid on that floor for probably 4, 5, maybe 6 hours even. So I don't remember much of what was going on. It was my partner trying to deal with everything. And there was no one in the waiting room. There was two or three people in this whole waiting room, but they were saying how I couldn't have a bed, and it was ridiculous. So when they moved me to this other ward, I don't know if it was a ward or not, it was another place you go in the hospital for the testing. So they took me to there, and then me and my partner still requesting, I need a bed, I can't sit up. So they said, no, we can't do that. So they put me in a reclining chair, which didn't really recline back. I kept saying to them, I can't sit in this, I'm in pain. They said, you've got to sit here, you've got to just deal with, try and firm the pain. I said, I can't firm the pain. So you've given me morphine, I'm still feeling it, it's hurting, something's wrong.
I see.
Then they moved me to another ward, doing the same thing there. Then they moved me to another ward.
How many wards were you moved to?
Four wards I got moved to.
Yeah.
In the process of before actually being admitted onto an overnight ward. And then they eventually moved me after my partner complained. I think my mum come up there, my nan was up there. Everyone was just asking what is going on. How do you not know what's wrong with him yet? And then they eventually moved me to Spencer Wing. And then once I was on Spencer Wing, they told me I need surgery fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the surgical team come round and see me. He had a discussion with me, and he told me how bad my appendix were, that they are on the brink of bursting, and obviously if they burst, it's life threatening. And then when I come out and went into recovery, I got taken back obviously to Spencer Wing. And the surgeon came around and saw me a few hours later, and he said to me, I was lucky. And he said, you're very lucky. He said, your appendix burst, that's why your surgery took so long. So I was like...
It burst during the surgery?
Yeah,
okay.
During the surgery. So when I got my paperwork for off the hospital, my discharge sheet, I questioned, why isn't it on here that my appendix burst in the surgery? And he went, it didn't. I went, no, it did burst inside of me. They kept me in for another 2 or 3 days. But yeah, it was a horrible ordeal. Margate Hospital are atrocious. Probably why they're really badly understaffed. I understand that they're doing as much as they can there, but they're really understaffed. They haven't got the equipment to deal with everything there. And they don't really take into account of how someone's really feeling in there when they're in pain.
The acting chief executive of East Kent Hospitals has apologised to those who faced long waits to be admitted to a ward. An investigation is underway after a load of rubbish was dumped on a country lane near Canterbury. Old tyres, cardboard and bin bags were discovered on Well Lane in Fordwich on Saturday morning. Council bosses say they'll look to prosecute whoever's responsible for the fly tipping. A Thanet man who was caught ignoring a driving ban twice has been told he faces jail if he does it again. John Green claimed an emergency involving his dog and a separate issue with his mother-in-law forced him to break the disqualification last year. The 43-year-old from Beacon Road in Broadstairs had previously been convicted of causing serious injury by dangerous driving. He's got to wear a tag and stick to a curfew. He's also got another driving ban. Now, a Kent charity is urging us to dress in bright colours today to reframe Blue Monday. It's sometimes referred to as the most depressing day of the year, with money tight after Christmas and the weather feeling a bit gloomy. Ketsia Kasongo is from North Kent Mind. She's been speaking to Lucy.
We wanted to reframe Blue Monday as Multicolour Monday for a few reasons, but the main reason being that mental health is not tied just to one day, and people can struggle with mental health challenges across the whole year. Also, we wanted to tell people that Blue Monday, well, it's a bit of a myth. A lot of people know that there's not necessarily any scientific evidence to prove that Blue Monday is a reality for many people. And by reframing it as Multicolored Monday, we also say that whilst mental health isn't tied to one day, you could also feel joyful on Blue Monday, on what is called Blue Monday. You could be happy, you could be excited, or there are a range of other emotions you can feel. And also, emotions tend to fluctuate throughout the day. So by calling Blue Monday Blue Monday, it doesn't necessarily reflect the reality of what people go through every day. So whilst the day itself may not be bad, it can raise awareness for some people. It's the connotations and the understanding that's attached to it that can be a bit of a problem. So that's why we've chosen essentially to reframe Blue Monday as Multicolour Monday.
Why do you think January is often perceived as this month of, you know, doom and gloom? And why has this Blue Monday myth kind of come about?
You know, I think there are many reasons which we could probably all identify with. I think one of the most common reasons for a start is a lot of people say that, well, January is that post-Christmas time. So bank account money has gone down. You know, you don't necessarily have the amount that you could have spent in December. You can't really spend the way you did in December and January. Secondly, a lot of people do talk about the weather. It's quite gloomy. You know, it's been raining these past few weeks. And so a lot of people associate their feelings to the weather sometimes. And that's a very real fact. You can feel perhaps depressed because of constant rain, or sometimes when the sun comes out, you feel a bit more joyful and ecstatic. So I think the weather shift does play into people's emotions sometimes. So those are just some of the reasons why people often, you know, coin January as this doom and gloom sort of month.
And what kind of difference can it make if you sort of make that decision to put on something maybe a bit brighter and wear like a brightly coloured jumper, or even if you see someone wearing bright clothes, does it kind of put a smile on your face a little bit?
Well, I think it does. I'd say in my own experience to begin with, I often see people wearing, you know, well, I'd say multicolored clothes, not just on a Monday, but I see people wearing all kinds of colours. And when you see someone wearing bright colours, sometimes it can intrigue you. So you think, oh, well, that's, you know, quite a bright fuzzy orange jumper. Oh, wow, that's a bright yellow jumper. And you're just intrigued. Is there a story behind that? Is that just someone's fashion sense? So I think when you see, you know, if somebody decided to wear different coloured clothes today or multicoloured Monday, you know, you can stand out and it quite makes a difference to other people. And you never know how you can be a ray of sunshine or a, you know, a positive element of someone's day, just adding a bit of intrigue to their day. So there's some good benefits to it, as well as feeling great yourself and reflecting potentially how you feel. So there's all sorts of benefits. And I would also say that even though mental health isn't tied necessarily down to one day, it is also okay if you are feeling blue on this Monday. If you are feeling sad or if you are feeling anxious, we're not eradicating that. That is absolutely fine as well. And you should definitely feel okay to seek the support that you need if you are indeed feeling blue today.
Kent Online News.
Kent MPs say they've been contacted in unprecedented numbers by parents who want the social media age raised to 16. More than 3,000 people contacted their local reps in just 36 hours, calling them to back new legislation being debated this week. It's a move backed by campaign group Smartphone Free Childhood. Spokesperson Felicity Winkles told me why they want the minimum age increased.
Things are really hotting up in Westminster at the moment, and this is really, you know, such a moment for smartphone-free childhood and parents, you know, the people that we're looking to bring together to act. Westminster is listening to parents' voices right now. So on Sunday, the leader of the Conservative Party, Kemi, she announced that the Conservatives would bring in a raise of social media to, well, basically to 16, so not allowing under 16s to access social media. From that, we've had a really dramatic, you know, a few days where the leader of Labour Party, Sir Keir, has said that he's open. You've had l leading Labour people, Andy Burnham, Wes Streeting, saying that they support restrictions for people under the age of 16 to access social media. And then from here, what smartphone-free childhood have done is that we have activated a campaign urging parents to write to their MPs. We've made it super simple. There's a link on our website. It takes under 60 seconds, or you can write a more personalised one. But MPs are listening, and within 48 hours of the campaign launching, we had 3,400 residents from Kent email their MPs all over Kent. That number is now towards 5,000. And we're hearing from MPs themselves unprecedented levels that they are receiving, you know, emails expressing parents' will that they really want government to be supporting this. Yeah, it's really exciting.
At the moment, it's recommended that it's 13 and smartphone free, and obviously all these parents are calling for it to be 16. What difference does the 3 years make?
Oh, huge. It's actually Jonathan Haider, who's a leading sort of psychologist and has written an amazing book called The Anxious Generation, which I would urge anybody to read if they're interested in the subject and have, you know, young or teenage children. He has sort of publicly said that 15 is actually a really important age of puberty, and where the minds of boys and girls are really, really transforming and changing. So actually, at sort of keeping that age limit to 16 is really, really important, and those few years are critical. But actually, what we're seeing is 13's recommended, but children are on it much, much younger. And I, you know, I'm from work throughout sort of speaking with parents and liaising with schools. They're seeing social media groups, you know, children as young as year 2 and 3 being given smartphones in some cases, and accessing social media from that age. I mean, that's, you know, that's the really sort of lowest age, but the average child is given their phone around age 11, and then generally social media therefore follows after that. They always find a way around it.
It's been revealed plants could be removed from offices run by Kent County Council as the authority looks to save money. Papers have revealed looking after the vegetation currently costs £40,000 a year. It's one area being looked at by Reform UK. They're also planning a review of car parks owned by the council, something that could generate £1 million. New figures have revealed roadworks have been in place on a stretch of the A2 in Sittingbourne for more than 500 days over the last 5 years. The section between West Street and Quay Street is a key route for drivers heading to and from the Quay Street roundabout, which links the A249. Local business owners say it's affected trade. We've asked the County Council for a comment. Plans to build housing on the site of a former leisure centre in Swanley have been given the go-ahead. The old White Oak site was knocked down in 2021 and replaced with a new building nearby. Developers now have permission to create 45 flats and 15 townhouses. None of them will be classified as affordable. A Kent shopping centre is set to welcome 3 new stores that will be taking over empty shops. Rituals, Holland and Barrett and The Works have confirmed they're moving into Fremlin Walk in Maidstone this year. The sites have been vacated by Suits Direct, Quiz and Paper Chase.
Kent Online News.
The reopening of the Orchard Theatre in Dartford has been pushed back by another 6 months. The site's been closed since September 2023 when a routine inspection revealed potentially dangerous rack concrete in the roof. Major fire safety upgrades are being carried out. Bosses say the project will cost around £30 million. grounds and should be finished at the end of November. The owner of an award-winning wedding venue in Kent has been given permission to build 50 guest lodges and a swimming lake. Chapel House Estate in Minster near Ramsgate opened in 2023 and is expecting to host at least 120 weddings this year. A new courtyard kitchen dining area is also planned along with a spa. A Kent winemaker has revealed plans for a new tasting room overlooking its vineyard. Bosses at Chapel Down near Tenterden say it'll accommodate increased demand from visitors. You can see pictures of what it could look like at Kent Online. Hythe Swimming Pool could get a £6 million revamp under Council's plans to boost leisure facilities. Swimmers and campaigners have been calling for improvements to the site in South Road, which has faced maintenance issues. The renovations have been included in their draft budget for next year, although it still needs final approval. Residents have raised concerns about plans to create homeless accommodation at a former church in Folkestone. An application's been submitted to turn the derelict Methodist Church on Sandgate Road into a community hub with 12 emergency beds for rough sleepers. Some neighbours are worried it'll lead to an increase in antisocial behaviour, which charity bosses dispute. A final decision will be made by the council. And plans to reopen Manston Airport have been delayed by another year and are set to cost an extra £100 million. An application to turn the site in Thanet into a cargo hub was approved back in May 2024. The owners, River Oak, are trying to find £750 million worth of funding and say the first flights now won't take off until 2029.
Kent Online Sports.
Football Now and Gillingham have secured their first home win in 4 months. They beat Newport County 3-2 after Gareth McCleary scored a stoppage time winner at Priestfield on Saturday. Here's manager Gareth Ainsworth, who spoke to reporters after the match.
Oh my God, what do you want me to say? What a game. What a win, but what a game, you know. I mean, fans got the money's worth today, certainly, and I'm so glad we got on the end of a good result at home, because we've waited for a while. I think the players turned up, but we also conceded too many chances against us. But wow, we turned up and we won the game. We found a way to win in a crazy game. And I'm so, so proud of the boys and the fans and everyone who's been involved in this, you know, players that didn't play. A real crazy game emotionally. But I think keeping cool and you know, just changed a little bit formation-wise just to try and get more offence on their back line, but still not trying to concede too many chances. It's worked. Some of the big players turned up, definitely, and made a difference. But there were some awesome moments in the game, and I'm not going to pick anyone out. I'm sure you guys will pick people out. I've got subs coming on and blocking with all their life, you know, to get the result over the line. Fantastic performance. Going forward, created a lot of chances. Could have been out of sight. But defensively, just want to tighten up a little bit, especially on set pieces. Didn't think we were good at them today, and that's been one of our strengths. But 3 points, brilliant. Really, really pleased, and hopefully it's the start of a run.
The Gills are now 14th in the League Two table. Staying with football, and Chatham Town's women have beaten York City Ladies in the fourth round of the FA Cup. They've secured a 3-0 victory in front of nearly 1,700 fans. Here's manager Keith Bowanis.
The crowd was absolutely amazing. I think it was 1,600, I heard.
Yeah, so 1,670.
Certainly broke records, and that's down to the effort that everyone here has made. And you guys as well, you know, getting it out there in the media. Hopefully, it won't dwindle down to like 50 people and a dog for some of the league games, because if we can get anything close to that in other home games, then it does give us an advantage. Right from the start, you could feel the buzz.
Yeah.
You know, my wife's here and she came in the dressing room. She went, it's buzzing out there. It's like, it's heaving. And like, when the girls come out and they see that and lining across there, it gives you a different feeling. And it gave me a different feeling. Yeah. I've been in front of 20 odd thousand. So in this stadium, it's just special. And everything I've said building up to this, you know, how special the club is. I'm just so happy that what I did was justified. The decisions I had to make, I feel, were justified. We had to change our system, change one or two different things, and it's gone on. And it's worked, you know. I think we dominated the game. They've got to be proud of how far they've come. I actually know a couple of their players. Yeah. The goalkeeper played for me a couple of years ago in the English Colleges squad. And she had a great game, I thought. So otherwise it would have been more. So I couldn't have asked more. Couldn't have asked more from the players.
And you talk about the buzz. I mean, I think I've parked half a mile away because it was so hard to get in. Queues getting in, My wife couldn't get a burger because it was so busy. It was mental today. It's brilliant.
Just talking to the other reporters there, that's how far the women's game's come. Mm. You know, this it is the FA Cup. It's the last 32, which is always going to be up there. But hopefully it was entertaining a game and a performance from us that, you know, even if a small percentage of these come back,
yeah,
you know, we'll be chuffed and we'll be happy. But I think the main thing is the ones that were here today have had a great day in more ways than one, I think, with the hospitality, with the community feel.
Yeah.
And we keep harping on about this being a community club. It is. You know, I've been around different clubs all my career, professional, semi-professional, men's, women's. This place has just got a special feel about it. And, yeah, I don't know how long I can last, but... yeah, let's look forward now and see what kind of dream we can get in the next round.
The draw for the last 16 will be made this evening. And briefly, in tennis, Kent's Emma Raducanu has been knocked out in the quarterfinals of the Hobart International. She was beaten in straight sets by world number 204 Taylor Preston. The 23-year-old from Orpington will now be turning her attention to the Australian Open. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can choose a subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, just head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.